Mini episode 1698 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1698. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you with one of my fellow original FDH Lounge dignitaries, Chris Galloway, who has been our lead football talker with us on the show for the last several years. And we are taking a look at the 2023-2024 NFL playoffs. Now, we took a very early look at the 2023-2024 playoffs back before the season. That was the culmination of our divisional previews, and we're looking at things a little bit differently here. Both he and I picked the same teams in the Super Bowl, and they are in the playoffs, but suffice to say, we both feel wildly different about the two teams at this point in time, because both of them, to varying degrees, limping into the postseason. And a little bit of a spoiler alert here, too. Chris participates in our already taped mini episode 1700 to 1702, which will be posted on Sunday for the 17th anniversary of the show, taking a look ahead at the year, basically as the calendar turns from 2023 into a very tumultuous 2024 in the worlds of entertainment, sports, and news. That's those three segments in order. 1701, we did not mention, you will not hear any talk in there of Nick Saban moving on. You will not hear any talk of Bill Belichick moving on, because those shows were already in the can. But I will get to acknowledge right now, even though we won't be doing it in 1701, that a couple of years back on the show, first one to call it anywhere, and I said at the time, this is a real clip and save moment, when Chris first put it out there that Bill Belichick could be getting left by the wayside, and he was, as we're taping this today. In New England, a quote-unquote mutual parting of the ways. Neither one of us, of course, forecast New England to be in this year's playoffs. But again, congratulations for being ahead of the pack on that one. And I'm very grateful you did it on this show, Chris.
Well, Rick, it's always a pleasure to be in the lounge. And I think the only thing I was off on, I was just a year ahead of schedule. And that's not to say that the Crafts didn't consider a move last year, because I actually think they did, or at least it was talked about somewhere in the recesses of in the bowels of Gillette Stadium. But probably just wasn't enough once he was making some different hires to fix his coordinator problems. But I think after this year, Robert Kraft had seen enough. The family had seen enough. They could tell that the roster did not have the talent it needed. They could tell that, you know, other than Matt Judon, the expensive spending free on free agents didn't do a thing for them other than spend their money. And so it seems to me it was inevitable. You know, there's just no way around the fact that, you know, Bill Belichick is 82 and 98 as a coach without Tom Brady. And for everyone that likes to, you know, in places like Cleveland, you know, criticize Kevin Stefanski, although that's sort of waned some, you know, Kevin Stefanski's record without Tom Brady is 37 and 30. So the idea that somehow Bill was untouchable, especially considering some of the non-functional aspects that were coming out of the whispers out of that camp in terms of New England and how dysfunctional they were. None of it surprises me. I appreciate the accolades. I was just a year ahead of schedule, but to me, this was inevitable that this was coming all season long.
Yeah, it ended the way that it had to end. And I have to say, the way that you've said that about people up there had seen enough, that takes me back in my memory bank here. Of course, John Cena, when he was WWE champion back in the day, as people tired of the way that he was being booked, you would see those seen enough signs in the crowd but spelled out for his name. I wonder how many of those were getting recycled at Patriots games this year.
The bill is due. I mean, look, it's real, right? The NFL is a what have you done for me lately business. And six Super Bowl titles once Tom Brady left was not enough. And we all know that Kraft and Belichick were butting heads all the way back to when Bill wanted to make Garoppolo the starter, and I guess in essence trade off Tom Brady, and it was Tom went to Kraft and the ownership, and they sided and forced Bill to ship off Garoppolo, right? I mean, we all know that.
Yeah.
That was 4 years ago that was going on.
Right.
So it's been bumpy for a while. So to me, even though, you know, maybe I was the first person to put it on tape somewhere, but I just don't understand how it could be a surprise to anyone. There was with that conflict over Tom Brady, of which they then went and won another Super Bowl after that conflict between coach and owner. That told me all I needed to know about once Tom left and Tom was sick of Bill, that and the closeness of Tom and Bob Kraft. Bob Kraft has talked about him like he's a son, right?
Yeah.
And so I just don't, I think I, you know, I just viewed it as like, it's inevitable that this thing is going to end. Unless Bill could find a way to get them back into the playoffs and make them, you know, competitive, right from the jump after Tom's departure, he was on thin ice. And I think that's what the spending spree was on the free agents, right? I mean, that never works.
Right.
And I think that was Bill acknowledging that, like, he's got a problem. So he took a flyer and spent all this money on free agents trying to shore up his roster because he has not been drafting well, especially off on the offensive side of the ball for some time.
Well, and what you're doing, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, generally speaking, when you do that, you're paying to get star players to put you over the top. In his case, he was overpaying functional players. So what's interesting is they came into this past year, and I think even the previous year, without a lot of obvious holes, but they had a lot of mediocre and overpaid players that were competent starters. But again, you need star power at a minimum of a half dozen positions out of your 22, and maybe more than that if you're going to be a real successful playoff caliber team. I will just say this kind of puts me in mind, my surprise at how this whole story has built over time just goes to the precedence in college football, because it's a thing where before it came out that Joe Paterno, there were kids getting diddled on his watch at Penn State and he had to go, there were people that were tiring of him there and people tiring of Bobby Bowden. And in both instances, I looked at it like, well, what was either place before they got there? So it's like, you might not like what the twilight years look like, but, you know, there is a kind of certain thing built in of, like, they were nothing before they got there. Does loyalty count for nothing? And I'm not saying that Belichick necessarily deserves it. As somebody who lived through his reign of terror in Cleveland in the early 90s, I can't say I'm not chuckling a little bit at this old trash bag getting shown the door. But it is a thing where that does sort of animate my surprise about this, because we talk about this, what have you done for me lately? Well, and again, you can look at it and say, Brady was the dominant reason for the Super Bowls, not Belichick. Yes. And still, you've won all these Super Bowls as a head coach until a couple of years ago, getting talked about as the GOAT among coaches. This truly is a matter of, if it can happen to Bill Belichick, it can happen to anybody.
Well, that's exactly right. And we saw in the last couple of days it happened to Bill. It happened to Pete Carroll. You know, franchises want to be as competitive as they can be. And if you're not keeping your franchise competitive, you know, they're going to move on from you.
Yeah.
The game, especially with these older defensive coordinators right now, the game is all about young, hotshot offensive coordinators.
Yep.
And these owners all emulate each other.
Yep.
And, you know, couple old defensive coordinators. Now, obviously, Pete Carroll acts like he behaves like a 12-year-old, and Belichick acts like a 112-year-old. So there's this little difference between those two guys.
Yes.
You know, one is a grumpy old man, and the other one, you know, thinks he's a 25-year-old surfer dude.
Yeah.
That said, you know, neither one of these guys were having, it was mediocrity at best at this point, right? And I think that, you know, Pete Carroll's a good coach, right? And I'm not saying Bill Belichick's a bad coach, right? I mean, you got to have good players to win.
Right.
And I think that he brought the best out of Tom Brady, right? I think Tom Brady, if he'd been unlucky and gone somewhere else, that for a long time, he and Bill worked. Who they were, their focus, their drive, it worked. But at some point, even the master loses their touch. Yeah. And in a league full of young, hotshot offensive coaches, Bob Kraft is not sitting back going, you know, I'm fine with like 5 or 6 more years of 4-win seasons until Bill retires because, you know, look at what he did for us in the past. And it doesn't work like that. Bob Kraft wants to win another one before he dies.
Yeah.
And he's looking at Bill going, you're not the guy. You were the guy in the past that we achieved great things. You're not the guy going forward. And it's time to move on.
Well, I will say,
End of story. Yeah. And to your point, no one is safe. Everyone, you know, and that person, anyone in pro sports thinks that they're safe. I mean, Paul Brown was the greatest coach of all time, and he got run out on a rail. So, no one is safe in professional sports.
Well, that's a special case. That's Art Modell being an egomaniac and not wanting anybody to outshine him in the spotlight. So that's not exactly an everyday kind of occurrence, the way that he got turfed. But I will say this as far as it goes, and as we start to take a look at the playoff teams here and how things are coming together and the models being used today, Belichick used to be sort of the standard, if you will, and that we've seen this in a couple of different sports. I want to be the one to buy the groceries also. Well, that was also misleading when it was happening there, because it's a thing where you look at the amount of talent and star power on those Patriot teams that won the Super Bowl, and Bill Belichick essentially was the trillionaire's Mike Tomlin, the trillionaire's Mike Vrabel, both also coaches who, look at what they do with what's on their roster. Yeah, and who's to blame for that, for the amount of sway that they have over the composition of the roster? So Belichick overcame his own deficiencies as a player personnel guy until he couldn't anymore. And you're seeing this now with most of the teams that are in the playoffs this year, that there is some, say it with me now, kids, checks and balances here, because if you let one egomaniacal tyrant control everything, you end up getting swept out the way that Belichick was today.
Well, Rick, there's only so many 5'11" lacrosse players at Colgate that you can draft.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, that's the discredited model. The model of today is that you have, you know, these players that are being procured by a process where, again, coaches, I think, in most instances have some say, but there is a general manager in there, and it's either the general manager having final say on the 53-man roster or as close to 50-50 as possible. Those seem to be the dominant models that we have here. And, again, using Belichick as a way to segue towards our preconceived notions here coming into the season, what we thought in the preseason, it is a thing here when we talk about what have you done for me lately, it is impossible to have forecast back in late August that Nick Sirianni would be on the hot seat to the degree that he is. He's not losing his job. Even if they lose 56-0 to Tampa Bay in the first round, he's not losing his job. But the bloom is off the rose with Nick Sirianni, and you couldn't have seen that back when we were picking them to be in the Super Bowl. And I think we both picked the Eagles to win the Super Bowl over Kansas City at that time. But they have just, again, the commonality there is Matt Patricia, turning over the defense to Matt Patricia, a Belichick guy, and seeing it just go in the toilet to almost historical levels here. Philadelphia and Kansas City both in the playoffs, but neither one of them more than a shadow of what we thought they'd be come late August.
Yeah, I think that on the Eagles front, and yes, we picked the rematch, we picked the Eagles to win this go-around. And obviously, coming into the preseason, I mean, there was really nothing to tell us that both those teams would have the drop-off that they're experiencing, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we all know it does happen to teams, right? You know, it happens all the time. You can have the same players, and then the next season, it's like, what's wrong? And I think, you know, we're seeing that. But at the same time, you and I touched on it with when it comes to Sirianni. We touched on it in relation to loss of coordinators.
Yeah, but that should have been the first part of the season.
The Eagles this year, but we had it flipped, which, again, our logic was they might struggle a little bit out of the gate on the front end with new coordinators, and then as the season goes on, they'll get stronger because, again, the roster's intact primarily.
Yep.
And they'll be fine by the end of the season.
Yeah, this makes no sense.
Who could have guessed that it would start 10-1?
Yeah.
It will start strong and then collapse down the stretch.
Yeah.
It's a complete flipping of what we thought would happen. We thought there would be a struggle with new coordinators.
Yeah.
But somehow, I mean, logic would dictate that would be at the beginning of the season, not at the backside. But yet here we are. And I agree with you. He's not losing his job, but I would say that if he doesn't fix that immediately next year, you know the Eagles don't suffer. They will move off of him super fast if he's not turning that ship around next year pretty quick. So look for some staff changes big time in Philadelphia while he looks to save his skin.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're coming in, they're limping their way in. The Chiefs' offense appears to be just broken. Travis Kelce looks like a guy who fell off the cliff and if this isn't the last season, I would suggest that probably next year is. He looks like a guy who's getting washed pretty quick.
Okay.
Mahomes is, he's Mahomes, but he's got receivers that can't catch a ball.
Yeah.
And it turns out that their tackle play hasn't been very good this year.
Yeah.
Patrick is struggling. His receivers aren't catching the ball. And it turns out that Patrick Mahomes, even as great as he can be, can't carry the entire operation just by himself. And I think they kind of gambled on that this year, right? Like they thought they could get away with that. And it turns out he can only carry so much weight.
Yeah.
And he can only be a Band-Aid to any deficiencies so much. So we're going to be wrong. There will not be an Eagles-Chiefs rematch in the Super Bowl. Neither one of them are getting to the Super Bowl. I'm not sure that Philadelphia, that's a tough game just to sort of transition into our matchups.
Yeah.
I mean, starting with that one, I think right now I'll pick Tampa Bay just because they're at home.
Yep.
Tampa Bay's looked bad the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But they went 1-1. They've looked bad. But, this is a choice between two not very good teams. If I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would probably put my money on Tampa Bay, and again, not taking into consideration, point spreads, but just, I think Tampa Bay will find a way to win this game. Philadelphia they look cooked.
Yeah, they do, and it's one of these things where I think we would all agree that had Philly started the year the way that we had forecast, say, even if it's like a 5-5 start, but if they had the same record now, people would be much more forgiving. It's the inexplicable nature of the collapse that has people at Nick Sirianni's throat in Philadelphia, because it didn't follow the script. They were a victim of their own success perception-wise through those first 11 games. Everybody thought they had it figured out. Turns out they didn't. And I think in looking at this here, shout out to FDH Lounge dignitary Derek Joseph. He and I were going back and forth on text yesterday. He was reviewing my picks from, you can go check this out on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, the fantasydrafthelp.com NFL end of regular season breakdown right there on the homepage. Click on it, check it out there. He was a little bit befuddled about my pick of Tampa Bay over Philadelphia, and I agree with you. I just think, again, Philly is not going to figure it out on the road in this situation. I'm befuddled that it's a Monday night game. When you're looking at the slate of games over the weekend here, I would not have guessed that one for a Monday nighter, particularly post Tom Brady, but I agree with you on that. On the Sunday night game, I'm actually going to flip my prediction from the one that I made here because subsequently, getting ready to make the picks, the weekly picks on the show for FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1699. I am going with the Rams over Detroit. I'm going with them to at least cover, but I am starting to think now that they may win the game because, again, the superior defense. Detroit still just kind of scares me with that defense. The Rams don't have as much firepower as Detroit offensively, but they're better balanced. I like Dallas to sneak by Green Bay, but I think that is going to be one that is going to be kind of a nail-biter here. And I do think that Green Bay can pull the upset on the road. I'd like them to cover, but I'll take Dallas here. So I think it's Dallas, the Rams, and Tampa Bay going into a weekend number two. You've already mentioned Tampa Bay. How do you see the other ones shaking out in the first round?
Boy, I tell you what, that Rams-Detroit game has me so torn up.
Yeah, closest one, I think.
I could argue you either which way.
Right, closest
like this
call.
Thing's going one way or another. Like, I could argue and be like, yes, this is why. I would tell you that you know, basically, in the second half of the season, the Rams have basically the number two offense in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, McVay, honestly, if Stefanski didn't have the year he's had so far, McVay might actually be my choice for coach of the year and not Ryan's. I think you have to give the guy a nod. I mean, he's coached his ass off this year.
Yeah.
Nobody expected the Rams to be above 500, let alone in the playoffs. I am beyond impressed. This one I'm so torn on. I feel like the Lions are going to come out trying to make a statement. They want to win in front of that crowd. That building is going to be rocking.
Yeah.
Right? And I look at offensively, the Lions have more weapons, right? But I think with Matt LaPorta basically not going to play or going to be very limited, I've got to give a slight nod, I think, to the Rams.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to. And this is from a guy who has fantasized about the idea of a Detroit-Cleveland Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling right now, I think the Rams are going to win that game. They're going to steal that one, and they're going to be the surprise darling that everybody's like, how are the Rams in the divisional round? A team nobody had in the playoffs, a team nobody had above 500. Everybody figured that they might be tanking and unloading Aaron Donald by the trading deadline. And yet here we are. So I'm with you. I'm going to take the Rams. And then of course, you know, if Detroit wins, I could say to you next week, well, it was pretty obvious they were going to win.
Yeah.
They were at home. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I could argue that too. But right now, where my head is at is I think somehow the Rams win this game. Dallas Green Bay is going to be way closer than it should be.
Yep.
That Green Bay defense is terrible. Dallas is just the team that we know. We're just all waiting for them to just fail.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say they're at home this season, at home against inferior teams. They've won big. I'm going to say they win this thing by 8 points or so. You know, it's, again, from a points first standpoint, it seems huge, but you know, in the course of a game itself, isn't really that big a win. But I think they'll find a way. I think Dallas finds a way. Mike McCarthy, like, saves his scalp. I mean, he loses to Green Bay at home in this game, and he might be on the hot seat pretty quick.
Yeah.
But I think I'm with you. Dallas finds a way. Rams find a way. Tampa Bay finds a way. And, you know, then we go into a divisional round in the NFC of Baker going to Dallas and the Rams going to 49ers, right?
Yep.
Mike Shanahan's worst nightmare.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if there's one coach he has not been able to solve, it's Sean McVay.
That is true.
So I think that it's Baker to Dallas, Tampa Bay to Dallas, and the Rams to San Francisco in the divisional round.
Yeah, well, and I'll tell you this, by the way, if anybody wants a tip watching the game here as to whether Dallas is going to choke it away or not. If Dallas can't convert on third downs, they are going to choke. Here's why. Dallas is second this year on third down conversions offensively. Green Bay is 25th defensively. If Green Bay is rising up and stopping them on third downs, Dallas is going to choke that one away, Chris.
I would agree with you on that. I would agree.
Yeah, that tells the tale right there. If they can't overcome that third down defense, that's going to tell the tale. You know, it's funny as you're talking about these teams in these cities here that if LA is able to throw some chaos into this in the divisional round, you know, I think it was 1979, Rams-Bucks. I'm sure we all had that on our 1979 season bingo cards, Rams-Bucks in the NFC Championship game. Theoretically, we could be going there again. Thing is, I don't think so.
Oh, my God, could we have a Rams-Steelers Super Bowl?
Yeah,
no,
that
we will not. No, we will not.
No, we will not, but it is funny to think about. But, you know, this is one of these things where, again, I look at it, and I don't think in either instance there, yeah, the Rams always play the 49ers tough, but I don't think there's anybody in the NFC that can stop the 49ers. Although, like you said, stylistically, matchup-wise, that might be as close to a scare as they could get in the divisional round. Dallas, again, I don't think a whole heck of a lot of them as far as being able to not choke, but I think losing to Tampa Bay would be like next level. That would be the funny thing is they'd be in the divisional round, but it would be significantly worse, I think, than losing to Green Bay, because at least you could be like, well, Jordan Love. But I mean, if Tampa Bay is able to do it and beat them to get to the NFC Championship game, that's the game that could be the end of McCarthy. But I think it'll be San Fran and Dallas for old time's sake here as we flash back to the mid-90s and early 90s, not to 1979.
Yeah, and when you say that, of course, now I realize you and I have boldly gone chalk in the NFC.
Yes.
True. You know, yeah. The idea of, you know, we're just going chalk here, you know, which feels icky.
Well, wait a minute, though. Not the Rams.
You're right.
And Tampa Bay's a home dog. Tampa's a home dog in the first round.
I agree. Dallas holds on and finds a way to beat Green Bay. They don't really struggle. They have no real problem with Tampa Bay, in my opinion.
Right.
I think from a matchup standpoint, Dallas is not going to struggle against Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And will end up in the NFC Championship game against San Francisco. But I got to say, and I'll reiterate, if there's one team I think can beat San Francisco, it's the Rams.
Wow.
They've done it. They're confident. McVay knows how to out-coach Shanahan. They see each other twice a year. I get that it's a massive upset, right?
Yeah.
But I have to go with San Francisco just because of the, you know, just because of what they've accomplished this year. But there is a part of me that says, man, if the Rams get past Detroit, they can beat the 49ers.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go 49ers with you. Dallas goes to San Francisco and gets utterly embarrassed, destroyed.
Yep.
Run out of new candlestick.
Mm-hmm.
Just bludgeoned. And the 49ers move on to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's how I see it. And I tell you, having said that, though, if McVay can get it done in the divisional round, he's going to go into Dallas, and it's going to be the Rams going to the Super Bowl against all odds. And what's funny is, but again, I don't think that's going to happen. I agree with you, San Fran over Dallas in the NFC Championship game. Picking the Rams to go to the Super Bowl when, I agree with you, that's the toughest first-round game to pick. But if they made it to the Super Bowl, what I always like comparing things in different sports here as far as how they feel. That would feel like picking a play-in team in the NCAA tournament, one of those 11 seeds that had to survive a play-in game. It would be like picking one, and I think that's happened, actually. I think VCU was actually a play-in team when they made the Final Four. So that's what it would feel like if the Rams as a 6th seed could make it, playing the toughest game of the first weekend, which we think they're going to be in. But again, you know, you correctly laid it out. They draw San Francisco, and that is the easiest path to see to San Francisco not winning the NFC. It's just that we don't see much of a path for that being the case. It's funny, we talk about a couple of the games here that they should all be really good games in the NFC. opening weekend here. Cannot say the same thing for the AFC, because the annual recipient of the What Are They Doing Here award in the playoffs, which you're going to get more and more of these things as the now that we have seven seeds in the playoffs, that would be the Pittsburgh Steelers, who somehow or another don't have a functional quarterback on their roster, but made the playoffs anyways. They're going to get destroyed by Buffalo. I don't care what the weather conditions are going to be. They're going to get destroyed. Miami, as a big fish guy, I'd love to say I feel good about them going in on Saturday night in Kansas City. And again, a lot of the things you said about Kansas City, I agree with. I'm not quite sure what it is with Travis Kelce. It could be a thing. He's torn in a lot of different directions now. He is the kept man of a billionaire pop star. That takes up some of his time and attention. I don't want to sound like a hater for talking about his much bigger podcast that he does with his brother, but you know, that takes up time and energy. He's getting pulled in a lot of different directions, all of his commercials and whatnot. I think the bigger thing for Kansas City is they were very, very arrogant in the offseason about getting a wide receiver. And again, Rashee Rice, thank God for them. They got him in the second round, or they might not have even made the playoffs. And any time you say thank God for a second-round wide receiver, that is a heck of a thing to say about an offense as potentially explosive as Kansas City's. But if ever there was a time that winning the Super Bowl was the worst thing that could happen to a team, winning the Super Bowl without Tyreek Hill taught them all the wrong lessons. And again, they've had to be carried by their defense a good part of the year. Nostradamus couldn't have seen that one coming. But again, Kansas City, I hate to say it, has got enough to hold off my fish. Hopefully that's the Morris reverse jinx, but I don't think so. And maybe by default, the game that could be the most competitive of the weekend in the AFC would be the number 5 Browns, who are road favorites against number 4 Houston. And I will go along with the conventional wisdom on this. I think the Browns are going to come out of this game. It's going to be harder with C.J. Stroud in there, which it wasn't a couple weeks ago for the Browns when they romped over Houston. That being said, the biggest variable in this game to me is that rookie quarterbacks just have not really been able to get it going in the playoffs for the most part over the last couple of decades here. It's a long-standing kind of a deal. No matter how great of a rookie season you had, this is where the rubber meets the road. The Browns defense, again, it's better at home. It's a little Jekyll and Hyde, but it should be good enough to give him enough problems there. I think Cleveland comes out of the first round.
All right. Now, with all the chalk, the first go around, I'm anti-chalk now.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you, I'm picking the quote-unquote upsets.
Really?
Not Pittsburgh. I think the Bills are a paper Buffalo.
They've been red hot the last couple weeks, Chris.
Yeah, but look who they've been playing and how they've barely been winning. I've not been impressed by any of it.
Okay.
Josh Allen is a turnover machine. And the one thing we know about Pittsburgh, right, is that they're at 10-7 because their defense finds a way to get the ball back.
Okay.
For all their flaws, they force turnovers and get the ball back. I mean, that's how they beat the Browns in week 2.
All right.
Just turnovers. So I'm going out on a limb. This is the shocker. The Steelers go up to Buffalo. I don't even think that the weather is supposed to be even really much of an issue, is it? I don't think it is.
Could be, might not be, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think in Buffalo it's going to be like it's going to be in Kansas City.
Well, that's true.
So I think the Steelers, who played all season in the toughest division in football.
True.
Had their brains beat in. They had to beat other people's brains in. I think they go up to Buffalo. They're playing with house money. They're not supposed to barely be there. Mike Tomlin gets another win season. I mean, say it with me, Rick. How the hell are the Steelers 10-7?
Well, again, and that's...
and so I'm telling you, Buffalo's had to run the table and their coach had to convert to radical Islam in order to get this done. And I'm saying this thing ends.
Okay.
And,
wow.
And there's going to be a lot of finger pointing, questions, etc.
Okay.
Steelers get the surprise victory in Buffalo to move on to the divisional round. Other game, Miami at Kansas City. A temperature of, what is it supposed to be, 4 degrees?
Something like that.
Yeah, 4 degrees, right? So you say there is no way a team from South Florida is going to go up to Kansas City and win a game when it's around 0 degrees. I think the team that can run the football better in this game is going to be the one. Because I will tell you this, I don't think Tua is going to be able to throw it well in this weather.
Right.
And I don't think Kansas City's receivers, who couldn't catch a football when the weather was good, are going to be able to catch a frozen, slick rock. So I think this thing is going to be low scoring. I think it's going to be a slugfest, a punt fest, field position, and the team that can run the football is going to be the one that wins this game. And my prediction is Dolphins are the upset.
Wow. From your lips to God's ears. I mean, listen, all those things are possible. Miami does have the running game potentially to pull it off under the circumstances. And if anything, not leaning on Tua and not leaning on the finesse passing game, maybe that's what the doctor ordered, because the finesse passing game just hasn't worked as well against better teams over a period of time. So maybe being forced to play Neanderthal football is just what the doctor ordered, strangely enough. And if this happens, this is going to be very, very reminiscent of a couple of years ago when Aaron Rodgers was still in Green Bay before he did whatever he's doing right now on various media platforms. But San Francisco, remember, they went in and they beat Green Bay, and it was like, wow, this is not the team that you would think would beat the cold weather team. But, you know, Green Bay was such a finesse team, San Francisco was actually tougher. The same could be the case here. Could be. I don't think it will be, but from your lips to God's ears.
I don't think Miami's tougher. I just think they're going to run the football a little better.
Okay.
And I think that, again, I don't expect this to be a high-scoring affair. The Chiefs' offense just can't score. So if the Dolphins' D can find a way just to keep the ball in front of them, I think Miami's going to surprise everybody in this game. The South Florida thing, look, last year Miami went to the playoffs and beat the Bills in the cold and the snow.
Hung with the Bills.
Right?
Hung with them.
Okay, right. Yeah, that's right. They didn't beat them, but they, with the third string quarterback,
yes,
they went toe-to-toe with them, right?
Yes.
So I'm just telling you, this time around, I believe Miami's going to get it done. And it's going to be a very quick exit for Kansas City, just like their Super Bowl partners, Philadelphia, and a lot of introspection coming in the offseason about how they're going to put these things back together to get, you know, to make sure that this historic 5-year run of excellence doesn't just come crashing to an end. I think they can make some moves and do some things and get right back on top. But I think this year they're going to fall flat on their face. Miami goes into Kansas City in the Ice Bowl, part two, gets the win, gets out of there.
Well, before you go to the last game, Chris, I just want to say that would be kind of in fitting, again, in terms of feel, in terms of what it feels like in the atmosphere right now. If Kansas City and Philly both go down this weekend, and to a certain extent Buffalo, the same week that Belichick retires, Saban retires, like, it feels like a Berlin Wall falls kind of a week anyways. It would be kind of fitting to see some of these teams get toppled this weekend. That's not to say it'll necessarily happen, but it would be in feeling with what's in the air right now.
Okay. And it certainly fits within that.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, not related, but kind of fun. Mixes it up.
Yeah.
Look, we have like, what, 6 new teams in the playoffs this year?
That's right.
Which is more than the traditional 4.
Yep. Although, again, some of it's the expansion of the playoffs. You're going to be getting new teams in, you know, especially towards the bottom.
Right, yeah. Usually it's 4 teams. This year it's 6. Impressive.
Yeah.
So, last one, Cleveland at Houston. You know that I think I might have mentioned this to you, I asked a Browns fan, this was the one matchup I didn't want in the first round.
Really?
It was, I didn't want it at all.
Okay.
First of all, I hate having to beat a team twice.
Yeah, true.
First of all, that's always tough. We were just down there, okay?
Yeah.
We got by without a field goal kicker because, and because of injury. C.J. Stroud was out. If I remember correctly, Will Anderson was out too.
I think so.
Yeah. So they're, you know, so and of course they manhandled them. Great. That's a great outcome. But I think Stroud changes that whole thing, and Anderson back, and Nico Collins back. I think that changes this whole dynamic. And then the word today that Denzel Ward hurt his knee in practice, you know, that could suddenly become now an issue. You know, because God only knows that the Browns just, you know, they've been so lucky with injuries this year. There's no reason why they should be fine if they just have one more.
Yeah.
So all that being said, this is the matchup I literally am scared of.
Okay.
I'm not afraid of the Browns playing Miami, Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Buffalo. Houston was the one team I didn't want to see again.
Okay.
I don't want to go back on the road. I don't want to see C.J. Stroud playing with house money. It bothers me. All that being said, they gotta. You know, I think the Browns are going to win. I have to believe that because I just don't want to believe that this is how this little magic carpet ride is ending. Is on the artificial turf in Houston.
Right.
I think the Browns defense. Having been rested with more veterans than Houston, C.J. Stroud has struggled the most against the cover one, which the Browns predominantly run. That's been his biggest struggle as a rookie. You know, I feel as if that, you know, they should be able to rattle him enough. Schwartz should be able to dial up enough trouble for him that the Browns are able to execute and get the win. It will not be the game it was the last time. It's going to be tight. And I think the line from Vegas tells us it's going to be tight. But I expect the Browns to find a way to win that game.
Okay. Well, again, and, you know, as has been covered on the show ad nauseum, feel for
but
this.
That means that in the AFC, the 5, 6, and 7 seeds win.
That,
so when I say to you, I'm not going chalk.
Yeah.
That's what I'm anti-chalk in the AFC.
Well, except the 5 is the road favorite. But yes, I mean, I do see your point there.
Oh, yes. But they are technically the lower seeds. So
yeah,
three lower seeds are going to win in the AFC if I'm right.
Listen, in today's NFL, the 5 seed is almost always better than the 4 seed. The best wild card team is always going to be better, all things being equal, than the winner of the crappiest division in each conference. So it's a weird kind of a deal. I get that division
and
winners...
And to your point, I would like to see them change the way they do that.
Well, I was just about to say, I mean, I think you do have to respect the sanctity of winning a division, but having said that, we've seen it so many times here. It's like, maybe there's a threshold that if you win 2 more games than the 4 seed or something, like... I do think there should be some kind of mechanism.
How about this? If you win 1 more game, as long as you have a record better than... No, seriously. You
okay.
know, like we had that season where the Seahawks went 7-9.
Okay. Yeah.
And hosted the Saints.
Yeah.
You know, that were like 10-6.
Yeah.
Like that was... That's nonsense. Now, I know there are tough divisions where sometimes it's like, you know, they didn't have as good a record, but they were better, you know. Okay,
right.
That does happen too sometimes.
Right.
Not generally, but, you know. But I can see, like, I can make an argument and say to you, well, if the 5 seed and the 4 seed have the same record,
yeah,
the home game is at the 4 seed.
Yeah.
Because they won the division.
Yeah.
But if the 5 and the 4, the 5 has a better record, then it's at the 5.
Okay.
Like, you should be rewarded for your wins. If you're tied, you're both 9-7 or something, then the division winner gets the game. To me, that's the wrinkle they throw in and say, okay, if you're better than your better record, but somehow, you know, you don't get the host anymore.
Okay.
If you're
tied,
if it's the same, you're both 10-7, well then you host. Okay, because you were a division winner.
Okay.
To me, that's an easy change. But I mean, does that seem kind of just fair? Like, well, If you're tied with the same record, then, you know, you get to host. If you're not, you're on the road, buddy.
I would probably make it you have to have two more wins just because I don't know that, again, winning a division, even a bad division, is supposed to mean something. Let me throw you the unexpected curveball, though. I'll be interested to know what your answer is to this question, and that would be, would this also apply to the 3-6? I don't think you'd ever see it in a 2-7, but a 3-6, would you do the same thing?
Based on record, why not?
Okay. All right.
Why not? Let's say you had some good, that would mean that you'd have to have two bad divisions.
Yep.
Have we ever seen that? Like two terrible divisions and then two super divisions?
No, they're usually spread out between the conferences.
We've never seen that.
Yeah.
I would apply the same thing. If you have a 3-6, okay. Two records are the same, then you play at the 3. If you have a 3-6 and the 6 has a better record, sorry, okay. 3, division wasn't enough. You go on the road.
The only thing that makes me blanch at any of this is going down the road of the NBA where, like, they have divisions, but the divisions are functionally meaningless. I don't know if the NFL wants to go down that path. I wince a little bit at the way that they do that. But again, as we've covered on this show, my thoughts about the Browns in any of their games are pretty much untainted by yay or nay personally. So I'm just looking at it, you know, sort of clearly, not having the hometown kind of a thing here. And again, I think they're going to get by maybe a little bit easier than you tend to think, but again, this is not to say that I'm not buying the whole team of destiny gaga that all the Kool-Aid drinkers are putting out there. But again, you're looking at a fairly cleaned out AFC, so you're looking at a different scenario than I am, because I've got them week 2 going into Baltimore, and I do not see for again. And by the way, I'm going to give you credit. You're the one person who's really noticed that, like, before they sat Flacco down, like, are we starting to see the end of the mirage here? Like, I wasn't quite picking up on what you were, and I'm sure you hope you're wrong about that, but that's a thing where that's a possibility as well. I just don't see them going into Baltimore and beating them. I do have Buffalo and Kansas City playing in week 2, and I've got Buffalo taking it at home, because I have less questions about Buffalo right now than I do Kansas City, and boy, is that a... I'm grading on the curve with that one there. And again, the whole thing of, like, well, somebody's got to go in and play Baltimore in the AFC championship the last weekend. I think it'll be Buffalo, and I'm not sure that they're necessarily really going to hang with the Ravens. So as much as it nauseates me to say, as a lifelong Raven hater, Baltimore comes out the AFC.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. If your scenario is right and I'm wrong and Kansas City goes to Buffalo, Kansas City's not winning that game.
Nope.
Right? Buffalo gets out of the first round. Kansas City's not going to Buffalo and winning that game. Right. It ain't happening. Right. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
And again, your scenario, it's going to be hard for anybody to go to Baltimore and win.
Right.
So whether the Browns have to go in the second round or in the AFC championship game, that's a tall, tall order. Yep. I think for the Browns, so let me say this, in my scenario, I have the Browns then hosting a divisional game against the Dolphins.
Wow.
Which is what I, you know, that's the Chris and Rick matchup.
We need to both be there. That would be amazing.
I have the Browns pummeling the Dolphins in that game.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And then Pittsburgh goes to Baltimore. It's a typical AFC North brutal physical fight. Baltimore wins.
Okay.
Pittsburgh doesn't have the horses after a tough game at Buffalo to get past the Ravens in two back-to-back physical weeks.
Quick note, I think Baltimore would maul them, but that's just my sense.
I think if Watt's not back, I think they probably do.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I know the second game was against backups and yada yada, but the Steelers are 2-0 against the Ravens this year. And Mike Tomlin, like in the last 5 years, is like 9-1 against the Ravens. I mean, have you seen that?
Yeah, there's a lot of, and that's, Yeah, don't anybody take this in a unfortunate direction here. There's no race connotations, but the term black magic, I'm using it interchangeably with luck. Like, how do the Steelers luck through so many of the games they luck through? That's where, again, you know, black magic in the sense that it's implied and not a backhanded kind of thing towards Tomlin. They're the luckiest damn team in the history of the universe. But, I mean, how long can the luck hold out? It keeps holding out. I hear you. It keeps holding out. But when you're relying on 99% luck, dude, I mean, I don't know. I'm a data guy. That's part of the reason I don't like, I mean, I don't like the Steelers, but part of the reason I don't get the Steelers is I'm a data guy. And the Steelers never make sense in terms of the data.
Yeah, well, and that, I mean, to your point, well, how does that always happen? Now, that being said, that record and already being 2-0, if it's hard to beat a team twice in a season, it's really hard to beat them 3 times. I don't see the Steelers beating, in my scenario, the Ravens, the rested Ravens, in the divisional round after a big fight, a huge upset over Buffalo. But I do think it'll be a physical game, right? So in that scenario, I have the AFC Championship game as Browns go to Baltimore to face the Ravens. Now, you pointed out something I told you after the last game that Flacco played in, that game down in Houston. You know, they pulled him out of the game. Or they didn't call him, but the second half of that game, he was terrible.
Okay.
Nobody wants to acknowledge that the second half of that game, he threw for 15 yards.
Right.
And he was missing wide receivers, like, a lot. It was bad.
Mm-hmm.
He did not look good.
Right.
And I walked away, and that's another reason why I told you I didn't want to face the Texans again. Because I was like, God, he looked bad in that game.
You think they solved it?
The second half.
Okay.
If you just looked at the second half, you'd be like, ew.
Yeah.
The first half was so unbelievably good that it washes out the second half.
Mm-hmm.
But man, that second half was frightening to me. And I don't know, my hope is that he's not that, we get a better Joe Flacco, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the same thing, really, in large part against the Jets. He wasn't really good in the second half against the Jets either. He was pretty bad there too.
Yeah.
So I'm a little worried that the Flacco magic can't last. I mean, there's a reason the guy was like 3-14 since leaving Baltimore.
Sure.
And his numbers were terrible. I mean, Cleveland has, and some of this is on Stefanski, right? He's running an offense that's based off the Kubiak design that Flacco had his best season ever as a pro in.
Right. Right?
So Flacco coming to Cleveland was probably the best fit that guy ever could have hoped for in terms of trying to catch lightning in a bottle.
Right.
Stefanski has designed an offense smartly for Joe to succeed, and Joe has, to his credit, by and large, other than some silly turnovers, has executed it perfectly,
mm-hmm.
But you do got to wonder if a guy who seemed like he was washed, like how far this magic can run.
Right.
All this being said, Joe goes back to Baltimore in the AFC Championship game, if I'm right. That is going to have all the storylines you could possibly imagine.
Sure.
The NFL gets what they want in the NFC. They get San Francisco and Dallas, and they'll play all the clips from the 80s and 90s. Or not the 80s, but the 90s. And, San Francisco
81, 49ers. 81, the catch.
Well, you're right. Okay, yeah, you're right. I just remember, as a Cowboys fan, there was a big gap in the 80s that we tried to really block out.
And it started with a catch.
It started with the catch, right, exactly. Like, So they get that on that side, and then on this side they get the AFC North Championship being played out in primetime between the Cleveland Browns and the former Cleveland Browns, with their new quarterback, the former new Cleveland Browns quarterback, and it's a tough slugfest, a classic game. But unfortunately, Baltimore wins and moves on to the Super Bowl. The Browns eventually run out of magic, despite the great coaching job and the great defense. It's the number one defense versus the number two defense. Flacco does his damnedest. It scares the hell out of the Ravens fans. They're scared shitless that that guy's returning. It's not enough when you don't have Nick Chubb. Your top three tackles. You lost your defensive captain and Anthony Walker. At some point, this stuff catches up to you.
Yeah. And
my belief is that that's where it ends. The magical season ends for the Browns, unfortunately, because eventually the lack of depth, the injuries, they just can't compete. A team with Nick Chubb and Anthony Walker and, you know, 100%. Maurice Hurst, I'm telling you right now, they go in there and beat the Ravens. But the way they are right now, it's just too much to overcome.
Well, and what this takes us to, so this would be Harbaugh Bowl 1.5, I guess we would call it, since there'd only be one of them there this time, Baltimore and San Francisco, in the rematch in Vegas, in the city where a lot of people see the other Harbaugh brother potentially coaching next year. Won't that be interesting? But as far as it goes in this one here, again, a rematch from Christmas night where Baltimore was able to run it up. That was a game that I picked correctly. I knew they would cover, but they won outright and fairly convincingly. It is a situation where, again, you look at these two teams, and the tiers that I have as far as my power rankings right now, my second tier goes from like 3 through 9. But when we were doing our late season analysis on the show, when I was doing it with Lounge Dignitary Derek Joseph, talking about it, and to quote the now former AEW world champion MJF, the top teams in the league, really aside from Baltimore and San Francisco right now, mid. And I think Baltimore and San Francisco, there are years where you look at it and you say, oh, these two teams are destined to be there. They've been on a collision course all year. Well, what it was Baltimore and San Francisco just didn't succumb to all the questions that everybody else has right now. That's what it comes down to. And that is why we both see them in the Super Bowl, because they have very few flaws right now when we've just spent the last better part of an hour enumerating so many of the flaws with so many of the other teams that are going to be trying to make the Super Bowl. I certainly hope that I am wrong on this. I will be hoping and praying that I'm wrong. I do have Baltimore again over San Francisco in the Super Bowl. How would you see it shaking out, Chris?
Rick, everything you say makes just perfect sense from a logic standpoint. But I'm going to go San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Just back to the old adage of it's hard to beat a team twice.
True.
And I literally, that's, you know, you like data and numbers, and I'm giving you something that's not data and numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm giving you, I don't know, hard to beat a good team twice. Hard to beat that 49ers team twice, right? Is that 49ers team really going to get beat twice? I struggle to think that. So in my head, you make sense. You make perfect sense, logic, numbers, whatever. But I'll go with Shanahan finally being able to, you know, get it done and win the damn thing in a real classic Super Bowl. The 49ers triumph over the Ravens.
Well,
and that's where we are. And then Browns fans, your misery in AFC Championship games, you know, continues.
After a long time away, it resumes. I will say, again, Baltimore and San Francisco, not much to separate them, but one of the things is, in looking at this here, again, go to the main page on fantasydrafthelp.com, right there, top of the page, the FDH NFL end of regular season breakdown. San Francisco 23rd in third down defense. It's the only real subpar rating that either team has in this whole ratings compilation.
And we both know that third down, Lamar Jackson will kill you.
Yes. So, I mean, that's one of the things I looked at, unfortunately, in terms of leaning towards Baltimore, is that a third down defense that's 23rd in the league is not necessarily, you know, that's not the one you want to go to war with, to paraphrase Donald Rumsfeld, when you're facing Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. But it's a thing where, again, in looking at this, if San Francisco is able to win Kyle Shanahan in one fell swoop erasing, or at least avenging, two of the big Super Bowl letdowns of the 2010s. First and foremost, his own team, San Francisco, against Baltimore back a little over a decade ago. And then Kyle Shanahan, of course, the 28-3 game that allowed Bill Belichick, as we come full circle on this show, to win a Super Bowl against Atlanta there in a game that, again, if they run the ball like one more time, stay within field goal range, don't let Matty Ice take the big sack. Hey, Belichick might have been gone a couple of years ago. That's the whole thing. You go back in time, you kill a butterfly, you don't know how the rest of humanity is going to be changed. But Kyle Shanahan can avenge both losses in one fell swoop if he can be the guy holding the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the game. If he's playing Baltimore, I hope to death that he is going to be doing that. For as much as I loathe the Ravens and would love to be wrong, but as much as I would love to be wrong about the Ravens losing the Super Bowl, I don't know if I love even that as much as I love doing the football shows here with you, Chris. A real pleasure. Thanks for being on today, buddy.
Hey, a lot of fun. And, you know, I hope I'm wrong, and it's a, you know, it's a Browns-Dolphins AFC Championship game. There you go.
That would take a lot of dominoes falling. I would say that I would be in the stadium that day wearing my fish gear. But having said that, knowing the urine bombs and everything like that to get thrown at people wearing opposing teams' gear, particularly in a high-stakes game, as the late, great Gordon Solie once said, discretion is the better part of valor. So I'll probably be...
That's right. Well, if I'm right and it's in the divisional round, those could probably be frozen, so you really don't want that.
Oh, yeah. Frozen piss bombs are even worse. As we're sitting here contemplating which types of piss bombs would be more preferable, what could be more fitting for the show than this one? But thank you. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1698.